Blog Talk Radio.
Today, I know everybody can hear me because I just said that, but we've had so much trouble with this music lately.
That's good music, too.
It is. Now we're just talking over. So, Jeff, how you doing, my man?
Doing well. It's been a nutty day, but this is a great way to end it.
Yeah, that's true. And we got two outstanding guests on the show today, or tonight, I guess, because it's 7:30 p.m. Pacific time, 10:30 Eastern. First off, we're going to have author Rebecca Drake on, and then we're going to have Matthew Bentley on, two authors that you actually booked here. First time I've gotten to talk to either one of them, so that's going to be very exciting.
I'm looking forward to this, yes, and Rebecca's awesome, but don't tell her I said that.
We won't say anything, she can hear us. So,
okay.
Hey, but I will say that all the shows here on Suspense Radio Network, and that's all five of them, are all brought to you this year by Kensington Books, so go to kensingtonbooks.com for more information on their authors and their new releases and their back releases and any news and anything that they got coming out. Make sure you go to kensingtonbooks.com to check that out. So, we had Mark Greeny on the last show. And I just checked, and I got Commander in Chief, so I'm going to try to read that, and it'll take 2 years, but I'll get through it because it's like 900 pages, and that was good. I was really worried about that. But let's jump into our first guest here, Jeff. Again, her latest book is out March 22nd. So if you're hearing this before March 22nd, set an alert in your phone, whatever you got to do, so it'll beep up.
Pre-order it
March 22nd. And it'll wake you up. You can go to Amazon, and you can – oh, that's right. You can pre-order it. I always forget about that.
Yeah.
But the book is called Only Ever You.
It's a great book. I got to read it.
And, Rebecca, we want to thank you so much for coming on. How you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me, John and Jeff.
Yeah.
I'm really happy to be here.
Well, thank you for coming on. And I always forget that damn pre-order thing because I was always from, you know, I'm still living in the 80s and the 90s where I used to have to wait to run to the record store on the day on, you know, on Tuesday to pick up the latest album.
Yeah.
I always forget about that. So.
Yeah, I remember those days too. But yeah, the publisher doesn't forget. They love it to pre-order. And also Goodreads is doing a giveaway now. So if people are interested, they can sign up for a chance to win one of five copies. Woohoo.
Ooh, beautiful. And you can pre-order by going on Amazon. Of course, you can always go to RebeccaDrake.com, and you can find the link there, and you can go click on it. So why don't you just jump right in here and give us the backstory and the inside information into Only Ever You.
Oh, great. Thanks. It's a psychological thriller. It's basically a story. I think sometimes they call them domestic noir now. You know, it's a story about a family, and specifically a mother who's lost a child in the past and whose child in the present goes missing, and she and her husband become the focus of police suspicion. So I took kind of every parent's worst nightmare and tried to add a like fresh spin to that.
Cool.
And let's see. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to ask you, what compelled you to tell this particular story?
Well, it's interesting because, of course, you know, in many ways, like, there are so many books about missing children, so it's not something that was on my radar for an idea. But then I had a dream a couple of years ago. I actually dreamed what became the opening scene in this novel, which was a child, like, disappearing from a playground, you know, and that's, like, parents, it's terrible when your kid goes missing. I've had that happen before, and I think a lot of parents of young children have experienced that, if only briefly, and it's a very kind of scary thing, and it's something you're always worried about when your kids are small. And in my dream, the kid went missing, but then came back. And when they came back, they had a mark on their arm, like a puncture mark in their arm. And I had that in a dream, and it was like this very adrenaline-fueled dream. And I woke up and scribbled it down because it was so intense. And then in the morning, I realized, wow, this would make a great opening to a novel. And so trying to figure out, like, what's the story that goes with that opening scene took a little longer, but that was the inspiration.
Well, that's really cool. Since you're writing about little children, I'm wondering if you could talk a bit about the challenges about writing about kids, especially in such a potentially horrible situation?
Yeah, you know, for me, I know I've talked to a lot of, like, booksellers and some authors, too, who will tell me that they'll never read books about kids who are missing or kids who are in harm's way. And I think that's interesting because there's just so many out there. So I think to myself, does that mean, you know, you've excluded this huge amount of literature? And I myself, like, obviously I'm a parent, and so for me, obviously that's, you know, I'm sensitive to it too, and it's not something when my kids were small, it was harder to read certain things, but I think it's, without giving any spoilers here, let me just say that the child did not factor as a victim in this book, and that was important to me. I don't like stories in which myself, in which the kid is basically just a victim, and this is a strong-willed three-year-old, and I tried to bring my own experience of parenting, which is that it's complex. And as much as you love your kids, they can also drive you crazy, and that people don't really understand child abuse until they become parents, and that it's, you know, and that this is, you know, these aren't little angels, and this isn't somebody who's passive, so.
Oh,
now,
cool.
I got a little, the one thing that I kind of noticed, and I think that maybe some people notice, and I'm just going to kind of go off a little kilter here, is that the book cover one is so much different than your last three. I mean, it was just kind of different. And it gives you that sense when you see it, even though you don't read the back cover, you kind of have an idea about what's going on. Now, for a lot of people who don't know, and I just kind of, you know, give you kind of a chance also for a lot of people and fans who don't know, how much input do you have in those decisions?
You know, yeah, we all know that that's, actually this time around, I got more input than I have in the past, but I have to say that the cover for Only Ever You, this was the first cover design and we just loved it. So I actually had, you know, said nothing except that looks great, you know, looks fantastic. My first three books, I never even saw them until I kind of got the cover flaps in the mail. So I had like zero input on those. And often you get, you know, often it's, you know, what usually happens, and I know with other authors, and I'm sure you guys are well aware of this too, is that authors are often, you know, the people were a small cog in a big publishing wheel. And so they'll tell you, you know, to say, oh, I really don't like that cover. And they'll send you an email back that says, hey, marketing loves it, which is code for shut up, you know? This is kind of a departure. I mean, this is my first three were serial killer standalones, and this is a psychological thriller. It's kind of a different book, and it has sort of, you know, a women's fiction overlap. I always find that sort of a misnomer. But it's and I think the cover really evokes that very well. And I think it's all, you know, it still has, I think it's slightly creepy looking, and it's kind of intense, but it has a very different look. I like the cover, but yeah, it's definitely different than the first three books. And yeah, I was thrilled with it. I think it's very attractive.
Yeah, and I just kind of noticed because the last couple, you know, covers and things I've seen from authors, they tend to use, it looks like they're tend to use a little bit more, you know, like real life people to try to make the book kind of come alive. I kind of noticed that, like, you know, like Lisa Scottoline's had it a lot, and Lisa Gardner's now doing it that way, and Dean Koontz just did it that way, so it's different. But, okay, so off the cover scene now, because I knew Jeff was going to say something snarky about me in the covers.
Of course.
Because we had a big thing about covers not too long ago where I said, poor Jeffrey Deaver and that shit cover that he has to go with a steel kiss. I was like, that is just horrid. But
did you like the cover? I mean, that's the thing. People have
no,
such
no,
strong
no.
reactions
I think it
to
fits.
Covers, right?
What it is that when I read, you know, when you read what the book is about and you see the cover, you instantly have an idea. And then, of course, you know, you see mother and daughter, and people know, you know, if they don't know your writing, they're going to have to check it out to see, okay, what is this about? Because this could be not a thriller story. It doesn't say thriller.
Exactly.
But, of course,
right.
people who know
right.
you know it's a thriller. And so now they're wondering what's going on. So, you know, that's the only kind of the only thing that I noticed about it was are you going to get new readers wondering what's going on, or, you know, this and that. But, hey,
right.
You know, I don't make the big bucks. So
I like the cover.
So.
Yeah.
Thank you. So,
yeah.
But
yeah,
like,
it's only been dripping blood. Yeah.
Well, it could have. We could have had, yeah, you could have, like say, so, like, on the back of her head, it could have, like, had, like, a bullet hole. That would have been it.
Right.
But,
something
know,
like that. Big gun, you know, blood, a dripping knife.
I'm morbid.
Right,
I'm a morbid person.
A little more testosterone, too. That's the one thing I did say. I was like, my first reaction was, oh, I love it. My second reaction is, I'm never going to have another male reader. So I was like, this is, yeah, I was like, substitute the child for a gun, and we'd probably be doing well, but it's like, but truthfully, I think it works for the type of book it is, and that's it.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I think it gives
readers that sense of, you know, something.
Thriller.
I think it gives the reader something of a sense of mystery, and it wants them to look,
yeah.
And it makes them kind of see what it is. But I want to ask
right.
you about writing a villain in a setting this way, because
okay.
it is a tremendously emotionally charged subject. And
mm-hmm.
you have to write a villain that can create that kind of drama and that kind of sense of, I guess, ruthlessness and just nastiness. How do you put yourself in that position, being a parent? And, of course, I'm a parent of four. Jeff's a parent. How can you put your – how do you, kind of mindset did you have to get into to write a villain of somebody that scares the hell out of you of doing something like this?
Oh, God, but you are a parent, so you should understand totally that's perfectly easy. You just think about, like, how much your kids drive you batshit, and you just channel, you know, that. You channel that moment and that time. I mean, obviously, I'm kidding, but it's, you know, I think it's...
Good night, everybody.
I don't know. sort of not, right? I mean, I think you channel the parts of you that, like, I mean, that's the thing, I meant that seriously when I said it before, that I think you really never understand child abuse so well until you're a parent. Like, and of course,
right.
I'm not condoning it in any way, but you really understand, like, there are days when, you know, kids, I can remember when my kids were small and they're, you know, I just recently became an empty nester, so I'm like, you know, missing all that time with them, but I can still remember the time when you're like, dear God, you know, will they ever be quiet? And, oh, my husband and I were joking the other day because I was trying for a new novel I'm working on. I was trying to come up with the name of a preschool, and he suggested Noisy Bastards, you know, preschool.
Yeah.
And I thought it was, like, just amazing. And I was like, yeah, that's kind of true. And I think, in this case, too, the villain in this particular book is, you know, not trying to give much away, but I think she's introduced pretty early, is female also and is also a mother. And so for me, it's, I mean, this has probably said something about myself, but I find the antagonist usually fairly easy to write, you know, that you happen to, you know, it, perhaps it's cathartic because that's where, you know, I'm a pretty nice person in real life and don't behave in certain ways, but they're allowed to do the things that you know, we don't do. And also, it was interesting that, you know, Jill Lassiter, my protagonist, is, you know, the main character is a mom of a, you know, 3-year-old child, and the antagonist, the villain, is the mother of an adult child. And I, at the time I wrote this book, you know, I was in between. My children were in between those ages. I had teenagers. And so it was kind of interesting. It was interesting I could look back to when my kids were small for inspiration for that. And I could look ahead. You know, I was already seeing, you know, what life was going to be like when your kids leave, you know. And parenting is like just this long exercise in saying goodbye. And it's very, you know, and so that's the emotional part for me, too, and how that's, you know, that's a difficult journey for parents. You know, you're very, very attached to your kids, and it's usually for most people who are most parents, that's, you know, a very defining aspect of their lives. And for your children, you know, they're moving away from you from day one, you know, and that's their job, and your job as a parent is to let them go. And so I was trying to, you know, this book really explored that and explored the, you know, kind of crisis points with parents and grief and,
yeah.
Not sure that answers your question, but
yeah. No, I mean, but I mean, it's true because for the first 3 years you're teaching them how to walk and talk, and the rest of your life you're telling them to sit down and shut up. So yeah. You know, that's just kind of what you do.
Yeah.
Well, I have to say, first of all, you're not old enough to have teenage kids. I'm just saying that.
I am. My youngest is 19.
I'm not talking to you, John.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking forward to my kids leaving either, I got to tell you. But one of the things about domestic thrillers in general, and this question's to you, why in a domestic thriller can't they have a happy marriage?
I know. Isn't that interesting? Because I have, and I don't know, in general, my books, everyone's unhappy in their marriage. And I think it's interesting because I'm actually pretty happily married. And I felt like, what does that say? I was thinking about that the other day, and somebody on like some Amazon review for one of my previous books wrote, this person is a man-hater. There's not, and I'm actually thinking of having that made into a T-shirt, you know, man-hater. I think it's fantastic with a big exclamation point. I'm going to wear that around and maybe, like, quote them, have it at the bottom, like, Amazon group, man-hater. And I thought, yeah, you know, and I honestly couldn't disagree. I was like, Jesus, yeah, these people are, all these men are terrible, and I'm married to this great guy, you know, and I have been married for 26 years, and my life is fairly ordinary. And I thought, like, why is everybody so miserable? It's probably because that's the stuff that you mine. Again, it's just like you mine the bad parts of parenting and the challenging parts and, you know, the hard parts of life. Maybe it's just, maybe happy marriages are boring. You know, maybe it's like Tolstoy, you know, all happy families are the same. I don't know. But, yeah, I do think it's sort of funny that, yet again, and I was thinking, God, everybody I know probably thinks that, you know, my husband and I have all of these huge things, you know, affairs, all of this stuff going on. It's like pretty far from the truth. And it's like, and I used to do that too before I was an author. I used to read people's work and attribute a lot of it, think that this, you know, it was thinly veiled autobiography. And I realized recently, God, I hope nobody's doing that with my work. But it's because it's great that my life is not that exciting in those ways. But but it's so incredibly boring in comparison to these terrible marriages and all of their, and actually when I first like was interested in this idea, like I'd had that dream, but then at the same time I was really interested in exploring like the lives of like these men like Dominique Strauss-Kahn and Arnold Schwarzenegger. And like when I, like the earliest draft of this book was written around the time that, that their sexual scandals were imploding. And I was sort of really interested in like how people, you know, that kind of voracious and rampant bad behavior and how, and people in power, you know, using that power to do basically whatever they wanted with people and in a sexual context. But then as I got further in exploring the novel, I realized, like, I honestly found it sort of boring, and I became more interested because after a while, it was all just sort of the same. It's like men behaving badly, but I thought the women were much more interesting, and I realized I was just kind of much more interested in exploring mothers and parenting and, you know, how people, why and how people do the things they do. But it's true that, you know, it's true that there's a marriage in conflict and multiple marriages in conflict in these books. And I think it's because in psychological thrillers, it's basically the thrill is not, you know, the world is not in peril. It's the world writ small, right? I mean, it's the things that are fascinating. It's the idea that we never know what's really happening in other people's relationships and in other people's marriages. I mean, I think most of us know, and, you know, your parents too, I'm sure you go to the PTA meetings or you know other couples that you know sort of, you know socially through your kids' events, and then you'll hear something, you know, you'll hear something about like a marriage that's broken up or something really odd that happened with a couple, and everyone's shocked, like, oh, we never saw that coming. And I guess I've always been sort of interested in that, that people have these very public personas, and then things can be happening behind closed doors that we're just completely unaware of. And of course, a big part of that is marriage relationships.
I used to use PTA meetings as a way to just, like, be like a swingers convention.
Oh, lovely. I didn't realize, Rebecca, that I've been married 26 years also, so it's very interesting.
Oh,
I've been married
yes.
21. Shit, I thought it was a long time. You guys got me beat each.
Yeah.
I'll catch you sooner or later.
Well, and
well, you hope,
and you hate
right?
men. Okay.
Yeah. Right, man hater. Right.
Yeah.
Clearly.
That means we're not
going
to get to talk again. I got you.
And that's the funny thing. So, I don't. That's what's so funny about it. My son, who's like about to turn 21, is always both of my kids, but he's the one who started it, said that I think like an adolescent male, that my humor is like that. They'll often roll their eyes at me and because I'll be laughing at things. And I've always had lots of male friends, and that's what I find so funny. But I was like, I guess I skewer men in all of my books. So I guess that's just
well,
who I am.
Okay. What do you consider, since you've written three previous books that were more serial killer, and now
mm-hmm.
you've written a domestic thriller, what
mm-hmm.
is your, you know, they talk about branding a lot. So what is the Rebecca Drake brand?
Well, God, best-selling author, of course. I'm a crime author, a thriller author. You know, this is the direction that I was kind of always interested in going. So it's not, you know, and I'm not saying I obviously enjoyed the first three books I wrote, and serial killers are interesting, but they're sort of a dime a dozen after a while. No, I'm just kidding. But I'd say this is only ever you kind of marks the sort of books that I really am interested in writing, you know, and I don't like the term domestic suspense that much because it makes it sound again like, you know, like people don't leave their kitchens or something and we're talking about cleaning or house cleaning, which I find to be so incredibly boring. But it's hard finding a term that does work. But I guess, you know, I'm happy with being branded that way. You know. Psychological thriller, domestic noir.
Okay. Well,
do you challenge yourself when you write? I mean, was this book when you set out? Was this something that you wanted to challenge yourself in doing? Was it because you kind of did step outside the box a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think we're always, you know, I'm sure you guys too. Like, you're always trying to grow with your writing. I mean, and you want to see if you can say something more or do something more. I mean, that's definitely behind it. But mostly, I like the challenging. Sometimes when I'm within the book, I'll do things that challenge me. But for the most part, it's just like I get engrossed with one idea and then I just run with it. So I always kind of feel like, hey, call it anything you want. Just send me the check. But it's not like I set out and said, okay, I'm going to write a psychological thriller. It was more like, oh, here's this idea. And I'm just, in general, I'm interested in psychological thrillers. I mean, even my first three books had that element to them, even though they were kind of serial killer novels.
What compels you to sit down and write every day?
No, gee, let's see.
Starvation.
The bills.
Fear of starvation.
You know what my fear is? My fear is greeter at Walmart. You know, being like the 75-year-old greeter at Walmart. No offense to anybody who's doing that. You know, God love you. But that is like, that would be like hell on earth for me. So fear propels me. Let's see. I've written since I was really young. I mean, it took me a really long time to care about marketing and to get serious about it, but it's always just been the thing I've done. So for me, I'm actually very crabby if I don't write. And so if, you know, more than like 4 or 5 days go by and I haven't written something, I get kind of irritable. So for me, it's kind of akin to breathing, you know, it's just something you do. So I don't... finding that, like many writers, I've had those issues over the years with finding, you know, the self-discipline to say, like, okay, how do you get a book done in the time, in a set time frame, and how do you revise a book, and also for me, it's often hard, how do you stop revising a book? You know, I actually like revising them. I'm never, like, I can't stand looking at the finished product. I always sort of feel like shoulda, woulda, coulda, you know, could have been a contender. And now it's done. So for me, it's not, you know, that's just sort of who I am.
So it's probably pretty safe to say that when you're in one of those moods, let's say once a month like a woman gets, your husband just kind of hands you the laptop and is like, here. And you're like, what? You're like, yeah, when you're not writing, you kind of act really diva-like. So here, kind of like
definitely.
The Citrus commercial.
Definitely, yeah. And I'm an amazing whiner, so like a whinger, you know, like, so yeah, he's much more likely to be like, yeah, why don't you just go in your office here? Let's free up time for you. You know, you go in and just write. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what, Rebecca, we want to thank you for coming on. We are right up against the time, and it has been an absolute joy to speak with
you.
For the first time. I want to thank you. I know that we've met at Thriller Fest.
We have met,
and I don't know what year, but I know that we've
many
met.
Many times, John. I can tell it was memorable. Yeah.
I mean, because the thing is, when you go there, you meet so many flipping people. And
there's a lot of booze. Yeah.
I always tell people, if my purpose in life was to find the people that were missing on milk cartons, everybody would be fucking lost, and they'd never be found. I'm not
going to
admit that
year,
at
Rebecca?
All. Yeah, I suck at Amber.
Are you going,
like,
Rebecca,
was
to
it
the
a
shoe?
Blue car or a red car? I can't remember the Chevy. Oh, shit, was it a Ford? So, yeah, I'm terrible at that stuff. But I want to, you know, but again, thank you so much for coming on. It has been a joy.
Thank you.
Wish you nothing but the best, and stay in touch. And we'd love to have you back on, you know, if you have something else going on. You just want to talk.
Oh, thank you
or
so much. I'd love
bullshit.
To.
It'd be great.
Yeah, it's great talking to you guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks
all
for
right,
coming
you have
on.
A good one.
Take care. Bye.
Bye-bye. So again, everybody, let's remind you, the book is called Only Ever You. You can pre-order it now. It comes out March 22nd. Go to RebeccaDrake.com for more information on Rebecca, her news, events, all the connections that you need to get her through. There's a Goodreads giveaway right now, 5 free copies. Make sure you can go check that out. And all her other works. And we are going to take a short break, and then we are going to be back with our next guest. His name is Matthew Bettley, and we are interested in speaking with him. So in the meantime, listen to this. Thank you. after the break. Again, we want to thank Rebecca Drake for coming on. It was great to be able to speak with her on the air for the first time, so that was wonderful, and make sure you go to RebeccaDrake.com. We are now going to transition over into our next guest. His name is Matthew Bentley, and his latest book is called Overwatch. And we want to thank Matthew for coming on, so thank you so much, Matthew. How you doing?
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm doing great. I'm just happy to talk to you both.
And
thanks
like
for doing
this. Yeah, and your book just came out a week ago, came out last Tuesday, March 1st, and it's called Overwatch. It's a thriller, and, you know, right when people are going to hit it, they're going to kind of have an idea of what it's about, because you're going to see that, you know, kind of see what your history is as a Marine officer and being in the military, and, of course, you got that United States flag on there. But why don't you give us that inside scoop into what you got going on here?
So, yes, this is my debut novel. And it is about a former Force Recon platoon commander named Logan West, who wakes up from a relapse blackout to have to confront a mercenary sent to get some information from him in Logan's home in Annapolis. That scene right out of the gate, man, and the battle that ensues triggers a global race for an artifact that Logan and his platoon acquired from Iraq in 2004, an artifact that could lead to an attack that will draw the U.S. into another major conflict in the Middle East. And the book takes place across North America, Mexico, and Iraq. And I also tell a sequence about an ambush that occurred to Logan and his platoon from an insurgent compound in Fallujah. And I tell it over three parts throughout the book.
I have to ask, because I absolutely love this book and I love this genre. Was this your first book? And
it
your
is.
First book, essentially, it is. So you haven't written another book?
I actually have never written anything before this, other than, you know, like just any. Put this way, I have no creative writing background, no formal English literature degree or anything like that. I myself, like Logan, am a recovering alcoholic. 7 years sober this month.
Way to go. Congratulations.
Yes. Logan's relapsing. I never relapse, you know, but, you know, you take it one day at a time. And in 2009, I think I was sober for 6 months at the time. My wife and I were on vacation, and I was reading a bestseller that was I was bored out of my mind with. And I have dialogue in my head all day long. It's just kind of the way that I am. And I turned to my wife and I said, "You know what? I could write a better book than this." And she looked at me and said,
"You got to tell us
okay.
what it was. You got to
know
who it was."
There's absolutely not a chance. I'm taking that one to the grave, no matter what.
Oh, come on! Was it Dan Brown?
No. But those
oh,
are,
because his last two books sucked.
Yes, I will not comment on it. Put it that way. It was not Dan Brown.
Will you give me the initials?
No.
Did they
reason,
have a cool cover?
The reason I'm asking that question to you is because most first novels, they've got good stories, but the writing is like, you can tell it's a first novel. You write like a pro from the get-go, so I got to ask, how did you write such a right out of the gate?
I don't know. I believe that this is what I was meant to be doing. And, you know, kind of I went with the write what you know, which is first and foremost, you know, I spent 10 years as an officer in the Marine Corps. Like I mentioned, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I was fortunate to have commanded a scout sniper platoon early on in my career. I deployed to Africa after 9/11. I deployed to Fallujah before the surge, and those deployments were in support staff officer positions. And, you know, I wasn't running around doing the things that Logan does in the book, but I did have a bunch of tactical training. And I don't know. I don't know how I did it. I just sat down. I knew what I wanted to write, and I wrote it. I didn't think about it. I didn't use an outline. I knew what I wanted to write, and I just wrote it.
So real quick, just to give a little background.
Crazy, but, yeah.
Well, now, real quick, just give a little background, because I don't know. What is a scout sniper? What does that entail?
So a scout sniper is a Marine who's specially trained and, you know, in long distance shooting. But is, more importantly, a scout sniper platoon is an infantry battalion's own organic surveillance and reconnaissance unit. So, you know, the way that the military, the Marine Corps is structured, at least when I was in the Marine Corps, again, I was in from 99 to 2009. And I commanded my scout sniper platoon from briefly from 2001 to 2002. And, you know, it's basically an infantry battalion's organic reconnaissance unit. So we'll go out and do reconnaissance over an objective or a target.
So this is your debut book. And so you never done it before. And you came up with Logan West. And like you said, he was kind of closely related, I guess, you know, to you in a way, maybe like an alter ego or something, and that's kind of where you built it. But then you bring in another character, John Quick, and so you have some other ones. Go into a little bit of those secondary, those co kind of characters, and how you had to create those. Because now, did you pull those from experience? Did you pull those from guys that you knew, or were they just totally just made up?
So what I would say is that I'm kind of I personally am a combination of Logan and John. On a day-to-day basis, I'm an incredibly sarcastic person. So I have John Quick's sense of humor just on a day-to-day basis. Now, when I get really pissed off or upset, then I can go into a little bit Logan West mode. But I'm 44. You know, I'm not running around doing these things while my guys are doing that in my fictional story. But yeah, those two characters are a reflection of who I am. And as for the other characters, I just made them all up.
Okay,
that's cool. So with your background as a Marine, and I got to tell you, my uncle is a retired Marine, and knowing him and knowing a lot of his mates, they don't put up with crap. It's like rigid, you know, the whole works. So I'm curious, keeping that in mind, I got to know, what was your path to get this book published, and how do you put up with that crap?
Oh, well, so the path to get the book published, that's just a brutal roller coaster. That was actually almost like more stressful than taking incoming rocket or mortar fire. It was just ridiculous. Because incoming rocket and mortar fire, you know, lasts for a couple minutes, whereas the stress of whether or not, or wondering whether or not you're going to get published, lasts for months or years. So for this novel, I finished the first book in 18 months, 8 days. Now that's while having a full-time job, working out every day. You know, my daughter was 3 months at the time that I started writing Overwatch and doing all those other things. I then was fortunate enough to be put in touch with two authors who gave me great constructive criticism. I then spent 6 months editing the book, and then it was time to figure out, okay, how do I get an agent? I used what's called Jeff Herman's Guide to Publishers, Editors, and Agents. I used the 2012 version. At the time, there were only 93 commercial fiction agencies. I was told by one of them that each one gets about 1,000 submissions a month. So think about the odds stacked against you. And then I started submitting the book to those agencies. And each one has its own different requirements. One wants only 5 pages. One wants 10 pages. Submit the manuscript online. Oh, nope, we want 50 pages printed out and send it to us in New York. And it was just, you know, that took 6 months. And then it was no, 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 no. And the no's just kept flowing in. And I believe it was number 82 that said, we want this. And from there, it was then, okay, now we got to start submitting this book to publishers. And then it was another 14 months before we had a deal from Emily Bessler Books at Atria, which is a division of Simon & Schuster. And here we are, and I actually had that deal in June of 2014. So the book's been done for a long time.
Yeah, and you know, and I think a lot of people don't realize just how not only long is the process of just getting it done, but you were done June of, you know, in 2014, and it's now March 2016. The book just now came out. That's why when we interview a lot of authors, they're like, oh, yeah, I've already got the second book in the series done. I'm already working on the third one, even though book one just hit the shelves.
And that is exactly the case with me. Book two, yeah, called First Shot, which is a continuation with the same characters. I've been done with that book since January of 2015. And it's in copy editing, ready to roll for March of 2017. Book three is completely planned and written in my head, and I know exactly where books four and five are going as well.
Oh, my goodness.
See, Jeff, there's the answer to your question off the air.
Yeah.
Look how I worked on it.
Yeah, an author told me once, and you'll appreciate this being a sniper, that the path to publication is like shooting a BB through the hole of a lifesaver at 500 yards.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. What I would say is that for me, in my case, everything seemed to just work out perfectly along the way, even though it's taken us so long to get here. You know, I'm unbelievably fortunate that I landed at the house that I did at Simon & Schuster, which as I said, is Emily Bessler Books, because Emily Bessler has created such greats as Vince Flynn, Brad Thor. She's got other authors like John Connolly, Jody Picoult, and people like that. I personally couldn't be happier and couldn't be at any place better than that.
That's pretty cool.
Now,
yeah, you're in great company.
Now, the one thing that I'm always curious, because you're not used to this. You're not used to talking about yourself, having to be interviewed like this and, you know, talk about your work. How has that kind of transition been, having to get out and kind of doing something that might not be a little bit, that might not be familiar? And in some cases, a lot of authors are just not comfortable in doing it.
Well, in my case, I'm actually a very extroverted guy. I am quite comfortable doing this. However, the irony is, as a recovering alcoholic, especially with somebody with my personality who's always been a very extroverted, ambitious, work hard, play hard kind of guy. So for me, after 7 years of sobriety, I'm constantly trying to focus on humility and just taking things a day at a time and just being grateful for what I have. All of a sudden, I'm being forced into having to talk about myself, which is kind of counterintuitive to what you learn as you get sober and you attend AA meetings and do things like that. So it's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, but the great thing about it is, at the end of the day, none of this is about me. It's about the readers, and it's about how much they enjoy the book and whether or not they enjoy the book. Because, you know, like I said, at the end of the day, it's all about them. And I believe...
Well, I'm curious, since you're writing about what you know, how much of what you're writing is real, and are we getting sort of insight into potentially secrets that we're not supposed to know?
No. What I would say is, and I once heard Brad Thor call it faction, where the places in my book are real, the units, the weapons, the tactics are all very real, but the overarching story is completely a creation of my own.
Okay. So how about the aspects of the military itself, though? That's pretty accurate, you'd say?
Oh, yeah, especially the way that Logan and John talk to each other in the Marine Corps. It is just brutal sarcasm. You know when things are really wrong, when all of a sudden Marines are quiet or they've stopped complaining, or, you know, that's when you're like, uh-oh, what's going on? Watch out. He might really be pissed off. You know, but the camaraderie and the brotherhood that they share, the esprit de corps, as they call it, I mean, all that is, and I tried to capture that as well as I could. All that is very real.
Hmm. Now, like with Brad Thor, I've interviewed Brad. I interviewed Vince a couple times, and so they always used to say that when they wrote some of their stuff, they had to have it kind of vetted through certain channels. Did that happen to happen with you? Did you have to have anything kind of vetted through to make sure that stuff that was going in there was okay for the public to know?
No, I did not with this one. Now, I do work, as a matter of fact, when I got out of the Marine Corps, I did a seamless transition, and I actually worked for the federal government. And my agency is obviously well aware of all of this stuff, but they didn't review this book because it has nothing to do with them. And book two did get, did have to go through my agency, but that's about it. Yeah, I make sure there's nothing classified or anything like that. All research I did for this book, you can do on the internet or it's places that I know or have been.
And I want to remind everybody again here that we are speaking with author Matthew Bettley, and you can go to Matthew Bettley, BETLEY.com for more information on his debut book called Overwatch, which came out March 1st, so it's available now in hard copy, email, or ebook. However you get your book, you can go to Amazon and you can order it now.
And make sure you do, because it's a terrific book. How do you write an action scene?
Well, I'm a very visual guy, and my creative process is this. I know what I want to do. I sit down at my computer, and I put on my headset, and I listen to musical scores to fantastic like action movies or epic movies composed by people like Hans Zimmer or John Williams, and I just kind of go into a zone, and I see the action happening in my mind's eye, and I hear the dialogue, and I'm feeling it, and all I honestly feel like I'm doing is transcribing what I'm seeing. I don't feel like I'm creating anything. I literally feel like I'm just transcribing. And next thing I know, like a couple hours are gone, and I've got, six or seven pages.
Gotcha.
That's a cool way to write.
Yeah, no.
I don't have a lot of notes. I don't use big outlines. I just know what I want to do before I sit down, and I go.
So now that you have done book one and you went through all that editing process and you went through the whole thing, and now you're kind of writing a series, and you don't have that long to kind of do it. You kind of have to, I wouldn't really say rush, but I mean, you have a timeline, you have a deadline now to kind of get book two done and get those things working. Was that writing process a lot different than when you're doing for book two? Did you change things from like book one to book two that anybody's going to notice? Did you clean some things up? Did you want to work on something that you thought, maybe I could do a little better in one, or something I want to emphasize more in book two? Did that ever cross your mind, or how was that process for you?
No, I would say it was book two was easier to write, especially since the initial constructive criticism that I received from those two authors, who are Christopher Reich, who did the Amazon interview with me, who saw the first rough. Yeah, thank you. He was. I was just thrilled that he saw not only the very first roughest draft, but then he saw the final product, and he was willing to do that interview with us. And then by another author named Betsy Harrigan. Again, these are, and I was put in touch with these people through people that I knew, but they both gave me some initial feedback from the very first rough draft, and then I tweaked my style, and then once I made those changes, they were kind of automatic. So with book two, I had already tweaked my style, and book two is, for me, a lot easier to write. Now, what I did want to do with book two is make it more intense, more emotional, and just as action-packed. And from the people who have read it, they said, yep, you've done that.
Oh, that's cool. Oh, I can't wait. Send it to me now after we're off the air, please. Then I can. Okay.
I'm sure Simon Schuster would love that.
Oh, yeah. And
oh,
then Jeff
sure
will have it read before he goes to freaking bed tonight, and then he'll already review it for book list and have it out a year early, because that's what he'll do.
Well, I review for several magazines and newspapers, and it's always frustrating for me because by the time the book comes out, I've already read it. And so I feel like I'm like,
yeah, you're always behind. I know. That's the way you get.
Yeah. Yeah, true. So one of the things that John and I talk about on the show a lot is writing series. And I'm curious, When you were starting writing Overwatch, did you think it was going to be a series? And why did you want it to be a series?
Absolutely. Yep. No, in my case, I thought about it from before I put the first words to paper. I knew I wanted it to make a series. Number one, if I were going to step out and try and step into the genre, I'm all about going all in. It's go big or go home. So if I write a book, I want it to be successful. But, you know, I felt like this is what I want to try and do for the rest of my life. So I always had, you know, the first three, and then it became five books planned in my head from day one.
So okay. You never had any thoughts of, okay, I'm gonna create new characters for a different conflict and go on, so on and so forth. You wanted to have people know, okay, Logan West, and we're gonna move forward with him and his team, and that's kind of what you were thinking.
Exactly. I wanted each book to be a self-contained story, part of a larger mythology. And that's what I've done, especially with book two, First Shot. I've moved the mythology further down the tracks.
And now here's another question, too, because we have a lot of authors and, you know, people that are aspiring to be authors, and they like to get into the game. What was the number one myth that was busted for you once you kind of got into this? You were like, oh, shit, I didn't know it was actually like this. I thought it was maybe another way because you were kind of on the outside looking in.
You know what? I don't think I had any myths or preconceived notions. And the reason why I say that is I did a ton of research about the business as well. So I knew it was going to be this brutal, gut-wrenching, long roller coaster ride for me trying to get it published. I was prepared from day one to self-publish this novel if I had to. I created a business plan because I knew that it was just as important as the creative side of it. And, in fact, we're using some of the marketing that I established contacts for before I ever had to deal with Simon & Schuster. Because, you know, if this is something that you want to do, you need to look at it from the big picture perspective. And at least that's my view.
Okay. One of the things that this genre, a lot of times people are so sort of in, you know that so well that when you read it, it's really hard for someone who doesn't have a military background to understand a lot of the jargon and everything like that.
Good point.
I'm wondering, when you were writing this, because, like I said, I love this book, what did you do to sort of balance between the people who don't know diddly squat about the military and people who are, like, living military and they like this too, if that makes sense?
No, it does. That's actually a great question because there is a balance that you have to try to achieve. You know, I know there are some thrillers out there where people really focus on the weapons and the technical details, but I know that when I read something, I don't want to be beaten over the head with a lot of technical jargon. So I tried to find a happy medium where, hey, I could explain this weapon's capabilities, but just enough so that it doesn't slow the action or the pace of the story. And that's going to be my goal for every single book, even if I'm talking about developmental technology or something like that. I'm going to try and strike a balance every time. Because there are books, and I've read them, where it's just like, oh, my God, I didn't need to know this. You know, I don't need to know how to write code for a cyber attack. And that's not what I want to read. And at the end of the day, I'm trying to write something that I would personally want to sit down and read.
That's cool.
Well, Matthew, we are kind of coming up to the end of it here. And so want to kind of do is I want to kind of give you, like, you know, like the last 30 seconds to, you know, kind of let everybody know maybe where they can get in touch with you or what maybe what events you're going to be at and things maybe into the future, like if you're going to go to BoucherCon or Thriller Fest and things like that. So you take it away.
Well, and thanks, guys. I appreciate it. I actually will be at both Thriller Fest and BoucherCon this year, and I didn't even know what those were until about, you know, a few months ago. But I will be at both of those things. And as for me personally, people can follow me on Twitter at MatthewBentley.com. The book's available everywhere, you know, every major bookseller, as well as Kindle and audiobook. What's awesome about this, they even did an audiobook, and the narrator is the guy that plays Charlie on ABC Scandal, a guy named, the actor named George Newbern. And,
oh, yeah.
He's fantastic. I heard he narrated Seabiscuit. But the guy just does such an amazing job bringing Logan and gang to an additional dimension.
Well, Matthew, that's awesome, man. We want to thank you for coming on. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. Good luck with your talk. I think you said tomorrow you're down in your neck of the woods there in Ohio and in Oxford. So that should be really cool for you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I'm actually here speaking tomorrow to the ROTC folks about leadership, sobriety, recovery, things like that. And then I'll be in Cincinnati on, Wednesday at Joseph Beth Booksellers. And then I'll be at the Barr Memorial Library in Fort Knox on Thursday, which is about as far as I can think right now.
Yeah. Well, and again, just to let you know, I moved from Westchester out to Los Angeles, so I got smart.
Oh, wow. I lived in Westchester, but that's a whole different conversation.
It is. And yeah, and you'll probably know why. That's why I moved out to Los Angeles. I moved out right when they were starting to build that IKEA is when I moved out here.
Oh, wow. I do know where they put the IKEA. That's right. That whole area was new.
Yeah. We were just up by Cincinnati Dayton Road is where we lived off of. Then that area out there is like up in there.
Yep, and my mom lived there while I was in college here at Miami.
There you go. See, you get that connection. You get that kind of connection, and that's always good.
Were you a sniper, so. John?
I wasn't, but I've had some dreams where I've been a sniper, but that's a whole other different story. Like 25 years ago when I was doing like acid, so but that's all gone.
Matthew, I will see you at Thriller Fest. Looking forward to it. And good luck with the book.
Well, thanks, guys. Like I said, I really appreciate you having me on. And most importantly, I just want everybody to enjoy the ride.
Absolutely. Oh, awesome. Thank you again so much. Take care.
All right. Thanks, guys. You too.
So, again, everybody, that is author Matthew Bentley. And the book is called Overwatch. And go to MatthewBentley.com for more information on his debut thriller. And Jeff, it's been a blast, my man, like it always is. We'll be back in a couple weeks to do this all over again. And I know that the fans are going to be loving it when we come back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, and our guest is JT Ellison. Can't wait.
Yeah. JT, if you guys have never heard her on the radio, she is a flipping hoot. I've interviewed her a couple times, and she is just, she's just funny. So that's going to be a great conversation. And then we'll have a topic put together, and we will be talking more reviews and things in the second half of the show. So until then, Jeff.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Always a pleasure. We will see you guys all in 2 weeks, all right? Goodbye, everybody.
All right, have a good one.
Keep reading. Later.